Hello, everybody. This is Paul Douglas Boyer. You're listening to Madman Machine Show 137 for Black Friday 2008, the day that everything is on sale. And this is the day when I go stand down by the door and catch the gray men when they dive from the 14th floor. When Black Friday comes, I stand down by the door and catch the gray men when they dive from the 14th floor. When Black Friday comes, I'll collect everything I'm owed, and before my friends find out, I'll be on the road. Black Friday falls, you know it's gotta be. Don't let it fall on me. When Black Friday falls, you know it's got to be. Don't let it fall on me. Black Friday comes, I'm gonna fly down to Muswell Brook. I'm gonna strike all the big red words from my little black book. Do just what I please, gonna wear no socks and shoes, with nothing to do but feed all the kangaroos. Gonna do just what I please, gonna wear no socks and shoes, with nothing to do but feed all the kangaroos. When Black Friday comes, I'm gonna stick my claim. I guess I changed my name. Black Friday by Steely Dan, one of the great stock market songs of all time. So today is Black Friday, and you're probably listening to the show after Black Friday, so you'll already know how the Christmas sales went this season. I know everybody's wringing their hands over whether the retailers are going to make it through this year, and everyone's wondering how many stores will shutter their doors after the Christmas selling season. A lot of people are advising you not to buy gift cards for people, especially at some of the lesser stores, because they may not be open in January. Gift cards for Target and Walmart would probably be okay. The gift cards that are just generic money cards are all right, except you have to pay money to buy those silly cards. So why not just give somebody a gift this year instead of a gift card?
Mad Money Machine is brought to you by Index Funds Advisors at IFA.com. Helping investors succeed by matching people with portfolios.
The economic downturn is hitting us personally. You remember last year, my wife started a new company, and we had a lot of fun going to the company's Christmas party last year. The owner put on this amazing feast. Amazing entertainment. Three, four different bands playing, including the surprise band, which was the Beach Boys. So we were all excited to hear what was going to be at the Christmas party this year. We were thinking we were going to really make a night of it this year. Well, guess what? There is no Christmas party this year. Excuse me. The company, the owner of the company decided, nope. Economic downturn, I guess, hit too hard. We're going to pull in the reins and not spend the money this year. So times are tough, and I just wonder, how's your Christmas party going to be doing this year? I'm thinking, with all the gloom and doom talk that there is around, about how the government just can't get its fiscal house in order. You know, you've seen the movie IOUSA, or at least snippets of it on the internet. You've read the book The Empire of Debt, and you've read all the gloom and doom from places like Daily Reckoning and Survival Blog and other places. The Nouriel Roubini, Peter Schiff, talking about the end of the empire. There's one little glimmer of good news, I think, that's possibly out there. And that is the fact that, yes, there are a lot of foreign holders of U.S. debt, and they have a whole lot of say all at once. They own a lot of America. You remember Yu Yongding from China's central bank, advisor to the Central Bank of China. And so one of the things that I think is happening is a lot of these foreign holders of debt are making demands of our government that it get its act together, something that we insignificant taxpayers could never convince our politicians to do. We just don't have the clout. Fortunately, maybe some of the foreign holders of all of America will bang on the heads of Congress and say, "Get your house in order." I've often wondered, why is Warren Buffett so in favor of this estate tax business? I mean, he's got an enormous estate that if it were to be taxed, the government would get a massive amount of it. A massive amount of money, that is. And there was an article out at lewrockwell.com by, I think, Thomas Woods. Yes, Thomas Woods. He talks about how, if you think about a family-owned business, well, a family-owned business is liable to be absolutely devastated by the estate tax. A son inheriting the family business whose plant and equipment are worth, say, $2 million, inherited from his father, and who's been running the business for 5 years, could be hit with a tax bill of $500,000, an amount he couldn't possibly pay out of the company's annual profits. So he has to sell, and fast. Well, it so happens that an avid buyer of businesses desperate to sell in the face of a massive estate tax bill is, surprise, Warren Buffett. Think of some of the motivated sellers that have faced the estate tax who have found a willing buyer in Warren Buffett. They include Dairy Queen, a Utah furniture store, and a Nebraska jeweler. So could it be that Buffett's support for the estate tax has nothing at all to do with self-interest, but instead derives from a pristine devotion to egalitarian ideology? Well, maybe some of these facts should at least be mentioned in media coverage of Buffett and his pro-tax crusade. So the central bankers around the world that own the world are all creating money to pay the debts of the banks that are in trouble. We got to prop up the banks. The banks are the most important thing in the world, according to the bankers. So if every country that has a central bank, which is just about every country, is inflating their currency, then the currencies will stay relatively stable to one another. But what won't they stay stable against? That's the stuff that you have to buy with the currencies. Yes, the commodities have to experience price rises due to the massive dilution of currencies around the world. But if we believe Bernanke, gold won't rise either. Because when Ron Paul asked him, have you guys ever talked about gold in your big central bank meetings? Bernanke said, yes, the only time we talk about gold is when we talk about selling it. So the central banks that own big hoards of gold, they don't want the price of gold to rise either. So they'll keep selling and selling and selling to keep the price of gold low. Let's pull something out of the Mad Money Machine tool crib. This time it's a listener-generated idea from Mike in Vancouver. Let's listen up.
Well, hello, Paul. I am a loyal listener, and I must say that I use every one of your free tools that you give us. Every one of them I've used. Well, actually, I'm kidding. But I did find a tool that I wanted to give you, to give to your listeners. It's called the HP Smart Select. It allows you to print. You load this little thing up. It's free. It allows you to print anything on a web page. You just select it and print it. For example, I'm looking at the Mad Money Machine table of what it takes to get back to even. Now, I don't really want to print this, but I have to. However, all I got to do is click this little button, and then I select your thing. And I just print that exact little bit of the page without printing all the other stuff and wasting all the paper. You can also clip it and email it with it. So there you go, and it is free. Thanks from Mike in Vancouver.
Well, thanks, Mike in Vancouver, for that. Just remember, I think one of the names to search for on this is HP Smart Web Print. One thing to be cautious about is it is only available for Windows. And we know nobody's buying Windows machines anymore. Like me, they're all buying MacBooks. Right. But anyway, thanks a whole lot, Mike. And if anybody else has got a tool to call in, feel free to call the voicemail line, 206-734-4763, or leave it at drop.io/madmoneymachine. That's the tool in the crib this week, HP Smart Web Print. And like other tools I've given you so far, this one is free. The best things in life are free. You can keep it for the birds and bees. Now give me money. That's what I want. And yeah, one of the things Mike mentioned that you could print with the HP Smart Web Print is the table that I put out at madmoneymachine.com called the Table of What It Takes to Get Back to Even. And it shows you if you have a decline in your asset of, say, 50%, what's it take to get back to even? Well, you need 100% gain. If you have a decline in your asset of 66%, what does it take to get back to even? You need a 200% gain. And so you can use the HP Smart Web Print to select just that portion of the web page and send that to a printer. Now, this business of percentages, it works the other way too. What about if you go into a store and there's an item that's retails for $100? It's marked 50% off, let's say. And then they have a big sign that says, take 30% off our already discounted prices. And so you think to yourself, 30% off 50%? What's that got to be? Is that 80% off? Do I get this thing for $20? No, it doesn't work that way. Percentages of percentages aren't additive. If an item is $100 marked off 50%, now it's $50. You take 30% off $50, you don't mark it down to $20, right? That'd be more than 50% actually off of $50. It would be instead $35. 30% off of $50 makes it $35. So instead of 80% off, it's just 65% off. Likewise, what would be 50% off of 50% off? A total of 75% off. It's the interesting thing is that applies to the losses in the year-to-date stock returns. Yeah, we've seen a lot of asset classes go down 50% this year. Well, now the percentages really start adding up. Each percentage is very important. If it ends up the year as 75% off, that means we've lost half again from where we lost 50% off. Are you with me on that? I'm not making any sense on that one. I'm just going to leave it as it is and move on. The FDIC bank fail count is 22. A couple of items of news on the multimedia front. I've updated about six times. Went through six versions of the Speculation Blues video. You can find that at YouTube. Search for Speculation Blues. I've also done a pilot podcast for IFA. It's their quote of the week. Now, I've done this as an audio, and I'm hoping that they're going to place that in their Index Funds Advisors feed at iTunes. I'll have a link so you can subscribe to that feed and get the audio program into that. Also, I turned that into a short video, just put a couple of pictures in with the audio, so that makes it available on YouTube. So that's a lot of different ways to get the IFA quote of the week. Of course, we started the pilot episode with issue number 40 of their quote of the week. There are 39 other quotes of the week that are in text form available. Now, here's the shortcut URL to get to it. The shortcut web address is ifaquote.com, and that gets you to their quotes of the week. Always interesting reading. I encourage you to check that out. Let's play a round of the world's favorite game, Guru Roulette. I've placed the numbers on a roulette wheel with the names of investment gurus. I'll spin the wheel and roll the wheel. And for a selected guru, give it a little background on their investment philosophy. So here we go. And the winner this time on Mad Money Machine Show 137 is Adam Smith. Now, Adam Smith has come up before on the roulette wheel. I think it was episode 81 or 87 or something like that. But here he comes up again on the guru roulette wheel. Now, I wonder what else do I have to talk about Adam Smith? Of course, Adam Smith is recognized as one of the founders of economics. Well, it's not quite true. I mean, he was the first guy to synthesize a lot of information that was already available. For example, this business about the example of the pen factory and how it takes 18 steps or something like that, that allegedly is copied from somebody who came up with that number in France. And he has the two big books out, The Theory of Moral Sentiments and the one shorthand, The Wealth of Nations. He's credited for inventing the term the invisible hand of the markets. That means when everybody is working in their own self-interest to get things done, there's an invisible hand that takes over the markets and achieves great things for the entire economy. I have not read completely Adam Smith's works, and I've tried a couple times to get started in it, but it's kind of like reading Leviticus, the old style of English. It's a little bit hard to read. So I did read P.J. O'Rourke's commentary on The Wealth of Nations, and I got through that a few months back. I think reading Adam Smith today wouldn't give us really a whole lot of insights about today's economic situation, but it gives us a good foundation for why capitalism is the best system we know about if we'll just let it work. Can we please let loose the shackles of capitalism? Can we let loose man's free enterprise without so many onerous restraints on free markets? And just let economics work. Congratulations again, Adam Smith. You're the guru on Madman Machine 137. And one of those constraints on free markets is this centralized notion of controlling the money. Why should money be controlled by just a few guys in ties? So they had an End the Fed rally this past weekend at many cities that have a central bank, New York Fed, Washington, D.C., down in Houston. They had rallies and people carrying signs to end the Fed. Ron Paul spoke for a while. You can catch his speech, of course, on YouTube. Well, apparently it hasn't worked. The Fed still exists. But in that same vein, there's a great episode of Econ Talked. Russ Roberts talks to George Selgin, the author of Good Money, which I've bought a copy of that book. I look forward to reading it, talking about coinage in England in the 17th century, 18th century. But he is also from West Virginia University. He's an expert in banking, and he talks about free banking. What would free banking be like instead of centralized banking? It's a fascinating discussion, a little bit deep. I mean, you have to listen carefully and think hard when you're listening to this podcast, but it's well worth the investment. I recommend checking that out. I'll have a link to it in the show notes. All right, so an article I read recently says that if we add in the Citibank bailout, the total cost that the government is shelling out in the big bailout scheme is $4.6165 trillion. And they say people have a hard time conceptualizing very large numbers. So let's give this some context. The current credit crisis bailout is now the largest outlay in American history. Jim Bianco of Bianco Research has crunched the inflation-adjusted numbers. And check out these other expenditures in the past. These are all inflation-adjusted costs. The Marshall Plan costs $115 billion. The Louisiana Purchase, back in Thomas Jefferson's time, cost $217 billion of today's dollars. The Race to the Moon, $237 billion. SNL Crisis, $256 billion. The Korean War, $454 billion. The New Deal, estimated $500 billion. Invasion of Iraq, $600 billion. Vietnam War, $700 billion. NASA, all of NASA, $851 billion. Now, all those things I mentioned, if you add them together, all of that stuff, if you add it all together, $3.92 trillion. $3.92 trillion. And according to this article, the total cost of the bailout this year is $4.6 trillion. More than NASA, Vietnam, Iraq, New Deal, Korean War, SNL crisis, Race to the Moon, Louisiana Purchase, and Marshall Plan all put together. What will the consequences of this be? Is it more than just Black Friday? The Learning Earnings segment is brought to you by Index Funds Advisors. This is the segment of the show where we learn how to earn our financial freedom. And boy, do we need to figure that out in these times. Well, this week we're going to do a little something a little different. We're going to play an audio clip from a video clip of David Booth of Dimensional Fund Advisors, the mutual fund company that IFA uses predominantly to construct their index portfolios for their clients. And David Booth talks about why should we stick around in a tough market. I'll have a link to the video itself in the show notes of this show. You can also find it at ifa.com. But let's listen to David Booth describe this market.
Well, there's no shortage of gloom and doom out there right now. It was announced today that GDP shrank in the third quarter, and so it appears we may be in a recession. Credit markets have been really tight. There have been a lot of, quote, financial turmoil, unquote, the past 6 weeks or so. Volatility is highest that anybody can recall.
You can see the VIX.
When we get into a scenario like that, my friends frequently ask me, is this now the time to invest in equities, or is this the time to maintain my standard asset mix? I say to them, yes, this is a good time to invest in equities, and yes, you should rebalance to your normal asset mix, whatever that is. That basically all the gloom and doom does is explain why the market's dropped 40 to 45% in the U.S., and even more in some of the other markets around the world. You've already paid for the risk, so it might be good to stay around for the expected return.
Notice the focus on the risk there.
A rosy outlook, if you call it that, or return to normal outlook, is based on really three factors. First is valuations. If you look at any valuation measure, for example, dividend yields now exceed treasury bill yields.
If they hold the dividend.
Price to book. And in 2000, the price to book for the S&P 500 was 5. In other words, S&P stocks sold at 5 times book value. Now it's on the order of 1.5.
Meaning there's a lot more value stocks.
So any valuation method you look at, it looks like we're at the lower end of valuations. The second bullet point, reflect back again on our philosophy of how markets work. This equilibrium view of markets, or this notion of market efficiency, and how that keeps us disciplined in times like this. Basically, what our view of markets and the way they work is that the marketplace is where investors come and get together and trade. Entrepreneurs come offering stock in their company. Investors come wanting to invest in companies. And there's a price struck for each share. And that price determines the cost of capital. The lower the price paid, the higher the cost of capital to the firm, and the higher the expected return to the investor.
He says invest, not speculate.
So in periods of time like this, some of my friends seem to think that there are only sellers out there. But if you look at the markets, there's a huge volume every day. A lot of investors are out there buying at what they think are very attractive prices. Whether they turn out to be right or wrong, we'll see. But that's the way markets work, as long as there's a voluntary exchange. Now, sometimes there can be periods of time when one might think that there isn't a voluntary exchange. And I think, actually, if anything, this may be one of those. But I think in terms of involuntary exchange, there are likely to be more involuntary sellers right now than involuntary buyers.
That's what Cramer was saying, a lot of forced selling.
The third point is the reason why I think it's a good time to invest.
No market timing now.
Appealing to people's intuition. my intuition tells me that if all other things being equal, then in periods of stress, there'd be the periods of highest expected returns. Particularly when you factor in the enormous volatility of markets now, markets appear to be riskier than normal. So I would expect a risk premium to be higher. So those are the primary reasons for why I think now is a good time to invest. And in general, there's a certain backdrop of optimism coming from the behavior of governments. In most cases, the government regulations has been frequently the cause of the problem. And so it's refreshing to see that governments are now trying to be helpful to financial markets. Whether they're right or wrong, we can quibble, but the effort is...
Government is not the solution. Government is the problem, right?
In summary, then, and looking at markets, it is now a good time to invest. I think this is probably a more attractive time than usual.
Better than last October.
You know, the pricing of risk. There's still risk out there, so we're not in the forecasting business. But in situations like this, after you've already paid for the risk and the increase in risk, I think it's very sensible to stay around and hopefully participate in the higher expected returns.
Thank you very much, David Booth, and good luck to you if you're investing in these tough times. I like the point about focusing on risk. He said, in risky markets, you would expect the risk premium to be higher. Risk is the source of returns, and if things are particularly risky, if you're investing in particularly risky times, well, you might expect higher returns to compensate you for the risk that you're taking on. Learning Earning, brought to you by Index Funds Advisors. So if you've got any feedback for me about this show or about investing or about anything else, email me at feedback@madmoneymachine.com, or even better, let the whole world see it at drop.io/madmoneymachine. Just go to that website, hit the little note button, type in what you've got to say, press return, and it's there for the world to see. Or you can call. Even better, leave an audio comment at the voicemail line, 206-734-4763. Calls are cheap. Go ahead and call. Dial that number. Visit Mad Money Machine on the web at madmoneymachine.com. I want to thank you so much for listening. This is Paul Douglas Boyer saying it takes money to make money, and it takes
when Black Friday comes
to make a Mad Money Machine. Please visit IFA, Index Funds Advisors, helping investors succeed by matching people with portfolios. I'll see you next Friday. Hopefully it's a White Friday. Enjoy the Christmas season. Should be a lot of things on sale. And I'm not just talking about things in the stores.